The Kansas City Royals swept their doubleheader against the Cleveland Guardians on Monday. Has the balance of power shifted in the AL Central? We'll talk about that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby, joined as always by Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. Thank you for joining us as we recap a kind of a busy day on Monday of games, a full slate of games, but not a ton of games with huge playoff implications. One that is very, very impactful potentially down the stretch. The Kansas City Royals had a doubleheader against the Cleveland Guardians. And Christian, they kind of dominated the Guardians, right? So 9-4 and 4-3, so 13 runs on 21 hits, including 10 extra base hits. They hit five homers in the two games. With this victory, the Royals 7-3 in their last 10 games. The Guardians are only 3-7 in their last 10 games. So Kansas City's now one game back in the AL Central, solidly in possession of second place in the wild card now, with the Minnesota Twins, who we'll get to a little bit later in the show, coming in a game and a half back of Kansas City. Who should be more worried about Kansas City right now, the Minnesota Twins or the Cleveland Guardians?
Maybe even the Kansas City Royals need to be worried about the Kansas City Royals, because they're dealing with some possible injuries with their rotations too. Although they had a fantastic sweep in that doubleheader, they might have lost Cole Reagan for a little bit of a time. He did leave his start early with some hamstring tightness, or calf tightness. I can't remember which one it was.
Calf, now, I think. Now,
yes. Either way, it might mean he misses a start or two or even more. So that could be worse. But I do think the Royals are rolling. And I don't know how much we can put stock into the doubleheader, though, because check out this stat, Lindsey. Since the beginning of 2023, the Cleveland Guardians are 1-15 in doubleheaders.
Whoa. Why? That feels like it might be one of those weird, like, sample size quirk things. But at the same time, that's 16, that's 32 games. That is a weird stat.
Yeah, very, very weird. No idea why that's the case. But yeah, the Royals looked really good, though. You can't be mad at what you're seeing from the Royals. You're even getting a former catcher making brilliant catches in the outfield. MJ Melendez made a beautiful catch. The camera got tricked. It looked like it was going to be a home run, and all of a sudden you just see MJ Melendez come out of nowhere and make an Avengers-type catch in the corner outfield. So you got to be really impressed with what you're seeing from Kansas City. I have no idea what's going on with Cleveland, because they looked really good, and I still think they're a good baseball club, but they're slumping very hard right now. Maybe it's just the end of the season's finally getting to them. Maybe this is, they were already exceeding expectations in my mind. Maybe they're kind of doing what we saw at Boston for the longest time. With Boston, with how great their pitching was at the beginning of the season, then it finally started to come. Until it wasn't. Now we're starting to see that Cleveland is starting to find their flaws. It's just unfortunately coming at the end of August and September, when they're still playing meaningful baseball, but it might start falling off here quite soon.
Yeah, I think my issue with Kansas City, and it's not really an issue per se, my question is, who is that third guy, right? Because you look at, okay, you've got Bobby Witt Jr. is MVP candidate, right? He's going to power you to a lot of stuff. He's batting .347. with a 1.0 OPS on the season. Obviously, I'm not worried about him at all, right? Vinny Pascantino. I thought Vinny P was going to contend for a batting title. I thought he'd be batting closer to 300, batting .261 right now, 18 home runs. Not the traditional power profile of a first baseman, but still doing really well. 96 RBI leads the team. Salvador Perez, I'm going to say a resurgent year at age 34. He's batting .282 with 25 bombs. Is that big three really enough for them to make hay in the playoffs when they have to face teams like Baltimore or teams like the Yankees? Is that enough, or is this they're battling to win the division in the regular season And then you're just hoping they can move on in the postseason.
Yeah, if they can get a little bit more power from like Vinny P, maybe like Hunter Renfroe, that would be helpful. But hey, it means Salvador Perez, he had a grand slam in the doubleheader yesterday too. So I mean, he's definitely, as you mentioned, he's resurging his career. It seems like when he's healthy, I think he had some injury concerns last year, if I'm not mistaken, but the year before that, I don't have his stats pulled in front of me. I think he was close to 40 bombs, or maybe it was the year before that, but he's not far removed from a 40 home run season, if I remember, or maybe it was 30, but regardless, he still has it in him for as old as he is, being a catcher.
2021, he led the American League in both homers with 48 and RBI with 121. I think that's the year you're thinking of. Batted 273. That's three years ago.
Okay, so 3 years ago, a little longer than I thought, but regardless, he's still showing that he has some point in being able to carry the team. I didn't know if that was going to be the case moving forward into the season. So I don't know if it's going to be enough, because that is a cautious 1-2-3 or mm-hmm. big three, not 1-2-3, if you will. When you look at all the other ones, when you look at the Yankees, you look at the Orioles, as you mentioned. So I think they need a little bit more from the role players. First one that sticks out to me is a guy like Hunter Renfroe, because we know he has that kind of power, and his arm sticks in the outfield, and obviously he's not going anywhere if he can produce with the bat. So that's the first guy that comes up to me that could step up to be maybe that number four guy.
Yeah, on the IL right now, we'll see if he can come back. For me, I've always kind of liked Michael Massey, the second baseman, sitting at 10 home runs in 70 games this year, batting almost 270. I've always felt like he was capable of a little bit more than you've gotten. And I think as he's readjusted to being back in the majors, I think maybe you can see a little bit. I could see him getting hot in the postseason. I do think that some of the outfield, I mean, yes, you know, we've talked about MJ Melendez having a great catch. He's still only batting 216, and he's got amazing statistics as far as bat speed and things like that, and, you know, exit velocities. He just hasn't put it together. I feel like you've got some pieces, but I do still think this is a little bit of a flawed roster. You've got Garrett Hampson, who played 90 games in center. I think your outfield's a little bit of an issue still. So,
you know,
interesting team. I still think you're a year away, though.
That's a good point. But, you know, they are finding a way to get it done. Other than the New York Yankees, they are second place in August in team OPS. They have an 802 team OPS. The Yankees have an 803, so they're right in there. So, I mean, when you're talking about all those home runs that Juan Soto, Aaron Judge are hitting, and you're only a point behind the Yankees in OPS for the team, and I think team OPS is more important than player OPS. So, hey, they're finding a way to get it done. Let's just see if it can translate into postseason, because I think we are going to see this team as either the AL Central winner or probably the second wild card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So looking at teams that are talking about probably winning their divisions, Philadelphia Phillies, Houston Astros open a series. Philly walks off Houston 3-2 in 10 innings. Really interesting kind of sequence how this happened. Josh Hader comes out for the Astros, strikes out the side in the ninth. They keep him in there for the 10th. He doesn't record an out. Kyle Schwarber starts off on second base. Trey Turner draws a walk. Bryce Harper hits a ground ball to the outfield. Schwarber scores from second. Game over. Two-part question here. We'll start with Houston. Oh, sorry. Let's start with Philly. The big three in the order. So Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper. Dreadful series against Atlanta. I believe they went, off the top of my head, I believe they went like 2-for-33 with 17 strikeouts. I'm not exaggerating. It was an awful series for these guys. In this game, 4-for-11, 2 runs, an RBI, 4 walks to 4 strikeouts. Are they back enough for Philly to make noise in the postseason? Or do you still need to find a way to get them right and hopefully get teams to stop just spamming breaking pitches at them every at-bat?
That's a good point. I think the recent series, the Royals, helped them wake up a little bit. We started seeing some really good performance from their entire lineup. Now, there are some questions with the pitching staff, and one of them is going to be pitching on Wednesday. Taijuan Walker is probably one of their biggest question marks. And they just get Ranger Suarez back. He looked pretty good in his return. But I think the Phillies are back, I guess, in a nutshell, if you want to give me like a solid answer. Yeah, I think they're back. And I think that's a tough break for other teams trying to contend to get back into the NL East race. It's like the Braves. But when you look at this team, and you'd have to assume, as well as this team is built, this team is built for the postseason. There are not many teams built like the Phillies when you're looking for the postseason. That's why they've had that success in the past few years. You'd have to assume they're going to figure it out eventually. And even though they had a pretty rough slump from the All-Star break and then to that West Coast trip just a few weeks ago, they're starting to figure it out.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, that's kind of where I lie, is it doesn't matter. They're going to make the postseason, whether or not they hold on to keep the division, if Atlanta can make a surge and take it over, whatever. But we've seen what they've done in the postseason when, you know, somebody, Bryce Harper gets mad at somebody and hits two home runs. You know, Trey Turner goes off. Kyle Schwarber hits bombs. Castellanos, something dramatic happens, and so he has to respond with a homer. We've seen kind of some of these situations. And so I don't know if it matters if they're going right now or not, because all it matters is the postseason. I will say, though, if Philly has this amazing first half that they have and then somehow don't win the division because these guys have been slumping so hard in the back half of the schedule, it's going to be, as a Braves fan, it's going to be hilarious, one. But it's just going to be disappointing, right? If I came to you at the All-Star break and said, hey, as good as Philly's has the best record in baseball, they've had the best offense in baseball, one of the best starts of a season in team history, they don't win the division, I think you would expect that the Braves behind them had to get hot and go like 50-20 in the back half of the schedule versus Philly being bad. It would be one of the biggest surprises, I think, of the first half of the season if I came to you at the All-Star break and said that. And so I think for morale reasons, they have to hold on to the division. They cannot drop the division. Obviously, kind of previewing this week, there's a 4-game series Thursday through Sunday. Braves in Philly for 4. Atlanta, if they win one more game, they will have the season series win, which means they'll have a tiebreaker over Philly. So very, very important for Philadelphia to not only go into that series hot, but hopefully find a way to win the series, if not sweep it, just so they get that tiebreaker back over Atlanta. Because the way things have gone, Atlanta somehow persevering despite their injuries, we'll get to them in a minute. Philly has been struggling with handling Atlanta this season.
Yeah, and it's not like they have a tough or an easy schedule to get to Atlanta. I mean, they still got to finish off this Houston series here. And
with the inevitable Houston Astros.
Right, and we have a great pitching matchup coming up today. We're going to talk about it in quick pitch. This Houston Astros team is still really impressive from what mm-hmm. they've gone from. I think we're going to have a lot of conversations about Houston today. I'm going to put them in one of my candidates for happy hour today when we talk about happy hour. So, this Houston squad, I think, you know, they gave up the walk-off yesterday, Lindsay, but I'm not that worried. I'm not that worried.
Yeah, and I think that was where I was wanting to go next with the Astros, because you look at the back-end mix. They have to throw Hader in 2 innings. And full disclosure, I don't know what his pitch count was after the first inning, so that's fine. But you look at the back end of the bullpen for Houston, okay? They just signed Hector Neris 3 days ago because they just don't have a lot of options back there. They have Brian Abreu, they have Neris, they have Hader. And this was a team that had a very, very strong bullpen heading into, like, coming out of last season, right? And instead of re-signing a bunch of those guys, they just signed Hader. And so yesterday, Brian Abreu throws the 8th. Scoreless, one hit. I'm sorry, no hits, one strikeout. But then Hader has to go 2, takes the loss, is now 6-7. Is Josh Hader, Brian Abreu, Hector Neris enough when you consider the rotation questions that we've covered on this show about the workload and how long some of these guys can pitch? Are those 3 relievers enough for Houston to make a deep postseason run?
Man, you got to hope so. But I think there are some concerns. When you look at the stat-wise, it seems like it's going to be okay. But when you think it's just 3 people compared to what you've seen from that rotation with injury concerns at the beginning of the year, it's got a lot better lately. You're just getting Justin Verlander back. Hunter Brown's looked really good in the second half of the season after a dreadful first start.
Yeah.
But if when you look at stat-wise, it looks like it's going to be okay. In the month of August, the Houston Astros have the best, no one better, in team ERA. They have a 2.78 ERA in the month of August. And when you look at Josh Hader specifically, even though he gave up the walk-up run yesterday, that was the ghost runner. So yeah, he has not given up a unearned run. He hasn't given up a single run in the month of August. He has a 0.00 ERA across 11 appearances in August. So I'm interested to see if it will be enough, but I do think it will be. I'm curious about the Nera situation because he's a good closer. The reason he got released is not because of performance. It's because the Cubs wanted to make sure they didn't have to worry about that $9 million investment next year because they're in a different kind of process of their rebuild. So they basically got a free pass getting an extra guy in their back of their bullpen. So I think it might be enough, but I'm curious to see if Hector Neris can hold on and get reacclimated back to Houston.
I think I've talked about this before on the show, but on the Braves Today podcast back in, I think, January, I talked to John Smoltz. One of the big things he said is to win in the postseason, you need three hot hitters, you need three hot starters, three hot relievers. And I feel like these guys can get hot, hot enough to carry Houston to a title or at least to another ALCS appearance. But you mentioned getting Hector Neris. I want to talk about that. I threw this over to you because I wanted to get this in here. So we saw him get released by the Cubs. Like you said, not performance, just for money. Drew Smyly, the Cubs are also releasing him so that he can hopefully latch on with a playoff team. Because you have to be in the organization, not on the 40-man roster, just in the organization on September 1st to be eligible for the postseason. Michael A. Taylor was put on waivers by the Pirates. Yeah.
Yep.
And we're going to get to the other part of that. Who's going to replace him in just a minute. And then we saw this last year. The Angels made some trades. They got Ronaldo Lopez, a couple other guys. They put them on waivers late last year. I believe the Guardians Reds. Claimed them.
Reds.
Reds. Yeah, and yeah. Like, yeah. So they went different places. This has become, this releasing veterans for money reasons has become a lot more prevalent in the last few years. Is this something where, hey, it's great for teams who are farther down the standings trying to make the postseason because of the waiver system and how it works based on record, reverse order of record? Is this a good thing where they can get reinforcements for essentially free to help make a push for the postseason? Or is this a problem that MLB needs to fix?
I think for teams, I think they find this as a nice thing to have, because as you mentioned, you're getting, you know, basically some free players. But as a fan, that's how I'm gonna take this approach. I don't like it because I think it takes a more conservative approach to the trade deadline, because especially this year, because there were so many logjam teams at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Plenty of teams were not willing to move certain players. I don't know if Drew Smyly or Elias Diaz was going to get moved at the trade deadline. I don't know if that was going to happen, but some of these players could have been moved if this wasn't an option, maybe for a player to be named later. And that would have forced the hand as some of these teams to say, we're going to compete now. And that's a whole extra month of baseball of changing the narrative, right? That changes the entire month of August if you don't have this option now. But it didn't work for the Reds last year. It didn't work for the Guardians last year. And they're the two teams that really went out and get it. They had got Lucas Giolito for the Guardians, and then you got the Reds that went out and got Harrison Bader. They went and got Hunter Renfroe. And it sounded exciting at the time. I remember when they went and got those guys, it's like, oh, the Guardians might be able to make a run now. They went and got Giolito. That could be a huge pickup. And it wasn't the case. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be anything blockbuster. But you'd have to think that it could pick up some depth issues. Like if you had, let's think about the Diamondbacks. You've had all these injury concerns. If Josh Bell, who they picked up at the trade deadline, but if he became one of those waiver wire pickups and the Diamondbacks picked up him right now with a Walker injury, you'd have to think that would make some sort of big impact moving forward, especially how tight the wild card race is in the National League.
Well, and I think that the response, I'm assuming the response the league would have to that would be, well, that's why it's subject to the waiver system, right? where the worst teams have a chance to claim Josh Bell before a better team would. I don't love it. And for some reason to me, this kind of feels, I don't know, it feels outside of the spirit of how that system should be designed. I don't know how you fix it other than maybe do something where you say the team, like if you waive a player after the trade deadline, you have to keep their salary for the entire season. Because the teams are doing this for money reasons. Let's be clear. Elias Diaz was waived for money reasons. Drew Smyly is being waived for money reasons. Now they're doing him a courtesy and going ahead and doing it now so that he can latch on with a playoff contender. But if any of these guys are claimed off of waivers, their contract, the remaining money on their contract, goes to the new team. The Angels expressly did it last year.
Yeah.
Trying to get under the luxury tax, and they did just barely, from what I understand, get under the CBT. So it feels like you could just say, hey, if you waive this guy, you're still on the hook for that remaining salary this season, whether or not he gets picked up, so that instead of waiving a guy, you just have to outright release him. I don't know. It feels a little outside of the spirit of the law. It follows the letter of the rule. Just feels outside right. of the spirit of how we're supposed to handle player movement and getting rid of guys that, you know, we're going to skip trades and we're just going to waive this dude. And it's entirely based on where you are in the waiver claim system. You don't have a chance to send a draft pick, obviously, or a player or anything else. You just have to hope nobody ahead of you claims them. It kind of feels like that's not really how baseball should work. So I guess that's kind of how I feel about it. And I don't, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's just my gut reaction to it.
No, I don't disagree with that whatsoever. And I will say that as much as I don't really like it, I'm surprised at how conservative yet again it is because of how conservative the trade deadline was. I thought we were going to see a lot more of this. Now we still have like probably today, maybe tomorrow to get a couple because you have till September 1st. You still have to have a good amount of period to let them go through waivers. So I would say, You still have maybe a couple
days. I'd imagine today's probably the deadline to start the process. Yeah.
Right.
3 days for waivers so that they can be picked up by the first.
Yeah. We'll see if anything happens, but I'm highly unlikely to see that any big names will move like we saw last year.
Yeah. I think it should just be you have to DFA the guy and you have to just eat the money. And then if somebody picks him up, that's between him and them, but you DFA
some sort
him.
Of penalty. Yeah. Some sort of penalty.
Okay. Getting into a quick pitch real quick. Couple big things we noticed from yesterday. First one, the Atlanta Braves. So they're in Minnesota, 3-game series against the Twins. And they absolutely explode in the first two innings. They put up 9 runs in an eventual 10-5 win over the Twins. Bailey Ober was on a streak of double-digit quality starts in a row, and they obliterated him. Again, 9 runs in 2 innings. He does not come back after the 86-minute rain delay. Max Fried does, however, goes 5 total innings. Fun fact here, 2 career starts for Max Fried against the Twins. 10 in the third innings. He's allowed 6 runs. 1 has been earned. 1 earned run yesterday in the first start, I think 2019 it was 3 unearned runs. Just a weird little quirk there. The Atlanta Braves offense, Matt Olson homered. He had multiple hits in the game. Actually, he had 4 hard hit balls all over 105. 3 of the 4 hard balls in the game were Matt Olson. Is Matt Olson back? Is this enough offense for the Braves for them to chase down Philly in the division?
I think they do. I think they have the opportunity. And we just mentioned at the beginning of the show that Philly's getting hot. But if you're getting Matt Olson hot for the Braves, Ozuna's already continuing on his path, and these Island of Misfit toys of Whit Merrifield and Gio Urshela and Ramon Laureano doing its thing. Laureano's been an impressive bat, too.
Merrifield led off yesterday and went 5-for-5. Second career 5-hit game.
Yeah, the only thing that I've seen from Merrifield over the past couple of days that have been, like, concern to me is he's got eaten up a couple times at second base. Now, some of those plays were really difficult, so I don't want to go ahead and, like, point fingers too much, but when you compare him to Ozzie Albies in the field, you gotta at least notice. But regardless, I think this team is a lot better than what it looks like on paper right now. When you look at the lineup and what you're used to seeing, the Acuñas, the
one third of it being DFA guys,
right? When you're used to seeing those names, And then you see the other stuff coming on, like showing up with Urshela and et cetera. I'm shocked, actually. I'm quite surprised at how well this team is performing. And I would not be surprised to see us heading into this weekend and there be a legit chance for the Braves to get 2-3 games within the Phillies. I think we're going to be in for a really exciting September. Really exciting September.
Absolutely wild. Talking about wild matchups, Phillies Astros today, Aaron Nola versus the returning Justin Verlander. Is this the last time we see Nola versus Verlander?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, right? It really could be. Verlander's what, 60, 65? I mean, he's been in for a long time. We were looking and getting ready for the show. He debuted in 2005, so he's almost 20 years in the majors. But he had a good return in his start against Boston. He went five innings. We said 5 innings would be perfect. It would be just enough. He only went 76 pitches. He wasn't too strained. Gave up 2 runs, 6 strikeouts, which is pretty impressive. That's not something that we normally see too much of Verlander these days.
Right.
So I'm really excited to see this. On the other side, Aaron Nola, he hasn't had the best starts lately. He's been having an issue, Lindsay, with giving up the long ball. It seems like it's happening almost every start. I think it's been, I want to say 6 of the last 7, he's given up at least 1 home run. That's got to get changed. But when you look at this Phillies team, if Aaron Nola is your 4th best pitcher, because right now that kind of seems like the case, you're in a really good spot. But I'm really looking forward to this start between Nola, Justin Verlander, 2 greats of the game. Verlander is an obviously Hall of Famer. I think Nola could be in consideration for what he's done. So I think you're in for a fantastic matchup tonight.
23 home runs allowed for Aaron Nola in 26 starts. He's pretty much averaged 1 start a month where he's not given up a home run. So he already has 4 in the month of August and 4 starts, although he didn't allow 1 against Washington 2 starts ago. I was hoping to save some more time for this, but the corresponding move for Michael A. Taylor being waived or put on waivers by the Pirates is an announcement that O'Neill Cruz, their shortstop, will be playing center field going forward, a position that he has never played in professional baseball. Is this a good or bad idea?
I love the idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, O'Neill Cruz has had some issues with errors at shortstop this year. I think he has 24 errors across his 112 games. So maybe moving him away from that shortstop position, moving him into the outfield could help with that portion. I've saw that some people have said that they're concerned about him moving to center field because of injury concerns, mainly his ankle. But shortstop is not the easiest position either for someone's ankle. Yeah. I think how big is he? 6'5"?
6'7", 215.
So 6'7", with the speed he has, sitting in center field, how much ground he's going to be able to cover. His arm is one of the best arms in the game. I can't wait to see that in the outfield. I'm excited. I think it's must-watch TV. I'm definitely going to tune in. I don't even care when the Pirates bat. I want to see when the Pirates are on defense today.
Yeah, going along with that too, I think Eloy De La Cruz is another player who eventually will end up doing a similar move. Guys that can have amazing arms, incredibly fast, nice and tall. He's the one who's 6'5", I think, but seemed to struggle with the routine plays. We have a pattern for this. We saw Fernando Tatis Jr. in a similar situation of great arm, great speed, struggled with the routine plays, and ended up becoming a gold glove outfielder. So I think O'Neill Cruz has what it takes to do the same thing, whether or not he sticks in center or ends up moving to right. We'll see what happens. I think Eloy De La Cruz would be another guy who would probably end up being in contention for a gold glove in center field from his athletic tools alone. And then a little bit of a hot take, I think CJ Abrams of the Washington Nationals is a guy who should eventually end up moving to the outfield as well. Doesn't have the physical stature of those other two, but has the speed, has the arm, also has the struggles with the routine plays in the infield. And I would much rather have a shortstop that made all of the routine plays and didn't make the spectacular ones, then occasionally make a spectacular one, but screw up the routine ones, right?
Good point.
And so I could see, I'm excited to watch O'Neill Cruz on defense too, just like you said. I want to see how that goes. We saw Jazz Chisholm do it, a little bit of a struggle at first to get it acclimated. After half a season, he was amazing out there. And I think that's kind of where we would go if O'Neill Cruz embraces the move. I think we'd see something similar with him as well.
Yeah, his first throw out at the plate is going to be electric, because it's going to be a hell of a throw.
Yeah, his 99th percentile arm strength, average of 95.6 miles an hour for his top 10% of throws from shortstop.
Insane.
Yeah. All right, wrapping up real quick here. This or that, we do it every Tuesday. This is one. Would you rather be the San Diego Padres or the Arizona Diamondbacks down the stretch?
Ooh, give me the Diamondbacks. Tough decision, but give me the Diamondbacks. Reason behind it, they've been hot with the bat. 851 OPS, best in baseball in the month of August. And one of the biggest reasons why, Corbin Carroll. Since he's every single month this season, he has improved in his OPS. He's gone from a 538 OPS in March and April all the way to a 914 in August. He's improved every single month, only one of four players to do so. So give me the Diamondbacks.
Ooh, I am so glad we disagree here. Give me the Padres. Arizona's strength of schedule remaining. Top five strength of schedule remaining. Average winning percentage of 526. They've got three against the Astros, seven against the Brewers, four against the Dodgers, and they have a lot more injury concerns than you see with the Padres. The Padres are missing Tatis. They're missing Ha-Seong Kim right now. Both of those guys, I believe, are due back before the season ends. Whereas in Arizona, it's Ketel Marte. We don't know about his ankle. It's Christian Walker. We don't know about his oblique. Gabriel Moreno has a groin strain. All things that have a tendency to linger, make it hard for guys to come back. And while I think Zach Gallen versus Dylan Cease is kind of a wash, I think that maybe you have better pitching in Arizona, but I think you have a much better bullpen in San Diego. So if I have to pick, give me San Diego, because their strength of schedule, 493 winning percentage, 22nd hardest. They get to play the White Sox for three. They've still got your Cardinals for three. They've got Tampa Bay for three, Seattle for two, the Giants for six, the Tigers for three. I think it's a much more winnable schedule down the stretch, and I'm not as concerned about their injuries.
Good point. I like that we disagree. That's a good way to end this off.
Absolutely. This has been First Pitch for Tuesday, August 27th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. Helps folks find the show. It means a ton to us. If you're on YouTube, leave us a comment down below. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Stay tuned. We're going to have a special happy hour episode this afternoon talking about the manager of the year races. So stay tuned for that. But until then, this has been First Pitch.